Well, hello. You're listening to another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Here we go. All right. I just want to talk for a bit before I bring out my wonderful guests about a couple things. I don't know. I'm just going to jump around, you guys. That's how we do it. That's how we go. Can we please retire the phrase gay card? Like, I'm going to take away your gay card. And I'm talking to gay people. If you're not gay, you probably don't even know this awful, stupid, basic garbage phrase. But it's just like, if you don't like something that that's been deemed great by the gay populace, the homo diaspora, then people will say, I'm going to take away your gay card. And it's so weird. It's like, we don't need to hand out cards. We don't need to take them away. We're all, beautiful, magical, complicated unicorns, and we don't need to all like the same things. That's kind of what's important about being queer, right? You're not like the mainstream. So, and I'm tired of defending why I don't like Barbara Streisand or Lucille Ball, and I will forever explain. And it doesn't mean that I think you're wrong for liking something like that. And there are plenty of very mainstream basic things that I also really like. So I'm not proud of it, but we're complicated people. But I want to talk about something that like comes up and it's just refuses to die. And it's just something that I know I'm going to come off like a hater. Oh, can we retire haters as well? I hate that phrase. I'm a hater of haters. The phrase haters. If you're opinionated, you're a living, intelligent creature, with thoughts and feelings. It doesn't make you a hater. Like, it's such a dismissive term that like, oh, back off, haters, which is actually a great show. Watch it. Our friend Steve Little's on it, who we'll talk about later on the show today. How about that? Anyway, stop saying haters. Stop using gay card. They're lazy expressions for maybe I have a different opinion than you do. And no one's right or wrong. That's the lovely thing about opinions. So I don't mean to be a hater about this thing that I'm going to talk about. I'm just going to say I'm fascinated by how it does not delight me. I'm confounded by this thing called Sex and the City. I've never understood it. I stare at it and just bored wonder at how people find it so great. I don't think here's the thing. I didn't really watch it that much. A crazy fact, I have not seen the first movie, but I have seen the second movie, which I know, and fans of Sex and the City are like, well, that's why you hate it, because the second movie is so terrible. No, it is a terrible movie. It makes zero sense. It's Liza Minnelli at the beginning singing Single Ladies at a wedding, like the song that's celebrating being single. You would never sing at a wedding. And why is Liza at the wedding? And it's Vegas and everyone's on coke and nobody cares. And then they're in the desert and they're in Dubai and there are these terrible jokes like Lawrence of My Labia, and I'm like, someone was paid to write Lawrence of My Labia, and someone found that funny. Like that stayed in the script. I get it; it's terrible, but the whole culture around it. I've never met or seen women like this. They are these drag queens, and I think it's a thing where they're these idealized versions, but they're awful. I mean, the one exception, I guess, is Miranda and Cynthia Nixon, who is the only person I think is a real person that I have when I've watched it. And yes, I don't watch it that much. I never did. I didn't like it. But you couldn't escape it from like the late 90s through now, through this week. And that's why I'm bringing it up, because there's all this drama around the Sex and the City 3 movie that's not happening. You can't not know about these women. And it's the weirdest thing that we have attached so much meaning to them. Sarah Jessica Parker is this harpy. I mean, she's great in other things, but there's this chirping, just clawing creature that she is. Who is this person who's so fascinated by all the things that she wonders out loud? And then you have Kristen Davis, who just looks like just, you know, happy to be there. But she, who is this like perfect, really annoying? Like she was always like that girl you went to school with that you're like, remember her? No, not her. Her. Oh, but her friend, that girl, her. Yeah, she was there for 5 minutes at the party. Like, why do we want to follow that character around? And then you have Samantha, who is just this beast of, you know, addictions on all levels and who has got serious problems. And, you know, and my friend Melinda Hill used to do a bit on stage about how Samantha made everything sexual, like put innuendo where there was no innuendo. And it was just all about like, I'll have a hot dog with extra mustard on a plate. And it's, which I love, because that's exactly what every line delivery was that. And, you know, so anyway, there's this drama right now that there's not making the third movie because, you know, Kim Cattrall's like, I'm 61. My 60s are about living my life. I'm like, I completely understand that. Also, we don't need it. We don't need this movie. It's getting sadder and weirder the more that we sort of try to make. And I'm not even making a statement, obviously, about, you know, that we're all getting older and who cares. It's like, it's just that they were never real. And I never understand it. And it just, there's this weird obsession with like, they're like brunch in hats, those hats that they wore. And like Sarah Jessica Parker would always wear crazy hats to the premieres of the movie. And which is really fucked up to me. Cause it's like, are you playing a character or is this a documentary? Like, aren't you saying these people are ridiculous in some way? Or were they supposed to be just fabulous? Like we watch them and go, I want that life. Really? To just put on a hat and like walk to brunch and eat like a scoop of chilled tuna and call that your life? Okay, I don't get it. Another thing, I just don't get hats. Can we just stop? I just see so many hats now and I'm just like, what is going on? Unless you're Aretha Franklin or Freddy Krueger, you don't need a hat, okay? Like you don't look good in a hat. When people say, oh, my head's too big, I don't look good in hats. Newsflash, no one does. No one looks good in them. They're ridiculous. Just as a child, and I used to go to church and see these women in these giant hats, and it was just ridiculous to me that they would put that on and go, uh-huh, this is the look. They're not adorable. They're not functional. They're insane. They're like, look, there's a party on my head. No one's invited. There's just this floating island of mess up there. So, I don't know. Take away my gay card. You know, take away haters. And burn your hats! Well, hi, guys. I'm sitting here with the lovely and wonderful Larry Dorff and Margie McGee. How are you all?
Great.
Real good.
Fantastic. Well, we all sound good.
Yeah.
We did a really nice sound check, which is always part of the fun of this whole thing. Because sometimes, you know, we sound cold and distant, but you guys sound crisp and present and here. So thanks for being here.
Margie thought she had a lisp.
I do. I still think it's why I'm not talking right now. I'm like, don't say anything.
We don't appreciate lisps on the Drew Drogi show.
It's
just
weird.
We just don't appreciate them. So
no, it's like when
I've never thought of you as having a lisp.
I've never heard my voice like this before. There it is again. Every time I say an S, it's like when you were little and you recorded outgoing answering machine messages.
Remember that? That was always That was always the craziest thing. That first hearing what your voice sounded like, because you hear your voice in your own head.
Why is it like that?
I don't know. I don't know why we don't hear ourselves the way other people hear it. And then, like, I remember, like, we would always, like, as kids, like, record little things on tapes, cassettes, and play them back. And I was like, who is that? That's not me. Also, I was such a bad singer as a kid. I was in choir. I think it was either church choir or a school choir thing. And I remember I was so confident as a kid, but I bet I was terrible. And I remember hearing a recording of like how bad the singing voice was, and I heard how bad my voice was over an entire choir of people. And then I was like, oh, I'm not meant to be a singer, because it's just no fun.
Yeah.
You know what it's like?
when you look in a mirror, you look the same direction all the time. You just see the same view. And
right.
then getting a picture taken.
Yeah.
Like, it freaks me out.
Oh,
like,
right.
I have the most gigantic bald spot that I never see.
But see, and that's weird because, like, I would never, I don't think that about you. But, like, it's weird what we see in ourselves and we don't, yeah. I know.
Well,
and it's
just profile, like. Profile, it looks like I have
crazy.
No bones. I'm shaped like a spoon. My face is just sloped.
I have no eyes and just all nose.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. It's so crazy. You know, how much we can just tear ourselves apart.
Well, yeah, your perception is just so different.
I know.
Luckily, we're not vain at all.
No, not at all. We never want to talk about ourselves, how we look, how we sound. Right. I think we really got to the core of who we were in this moment, for sure. Also fun for people at home listening, just to be like, oh, they're really talking to me right now. I know. But it's so funny. Like, it's weird, like, as a kid, you think you can kind of do anything in art and like invincible and like anything. And then you kind of are reminded when you see yourself or hear yourself in a new way. And it's like, oh, that's what it is. And then you judge it harder than anybody else because nobody else looks at it like that. Nobody else is going, you know. But I love on your show, Larry, on Nobody's, like, you guys love to make fun of each other's physicality and just because it's really funny because all three of you are attractive people, but you love to just like point out, like, you know, like didn't you have a thing about having no eyes or something?
I think we try, there's a reason that we're all middle age and have never really been on TV much before. So it's like, let's use that.
Right, yeah.
You know, just be,
It's great because we all have our quirks and our things. We're like, I am a character actor. I am not, you know, I'm not a model. And thank God.
Aging is just the weirdest thing because I'm so immature that I just assume that I'm still like a 19-year-old.
Yes.
I'm 40. I'm currently, don't tell anyone in Hollywood.
Okay. We'll cut this out.
I'm a young, fresh voice. I'm currently working on a show that has a 23-year-old on staff, and I literally could be her mother. We've had this conversation, much to my dismay, and I really realize, like, holy shit, young is different than this.
It's crazy. I know.
I was doing
Heathers and having to work with all these actors who are playing high schoolers. Most of them are older, but some of them aren't. And some of them are literally high schoolers. And, you know, and they're very mature because they're like Hollywood kids. And so like they know, and a lot of them are, you know, and they're so talented. I'm like, there's no way I could have done that when I was that age. I couldn't. But I forget, you know, similar things as well. And, you know, I'm just like, I am more than twice your age and a lot of you. And it's just like,
it's become my bit in the room that I'm like, Nana, who's like, I already worked at iPhone 8. Why do I need a new one? But it's true. Like, I really don't understand technology anymore. I'll say things like, you know, the One Direction or, you know what I mean? I went from like 19 to fucking 85.
Yeah.
And
it's weird because I remember being the youngest person in the room a lot of times. And I was always like, I have friends in their 30s and 40s. And then I hit 40 and I was like, all of a sudden like, oh, I'm the older man, you know, but it's all good.
It's great.
Thank God. We're
lucky to be here.
It really is. It's like, I wouldn't trade it for anything because it's a thing too that I'm like, I would have ruined it all. Like, I mean, I see it with these kids. I'm like, good, like more power to them and good luck. And I hope, but like, I just would not have appreciated it. I would have blown myself up.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
I think it's better later on. You have more of a point of view also.
Absolutely. And you have a lot more to say. And I can't imagine like being that age and having to do interviews or anything where you have to like talk about, you're like, you don't know who you are. And you don't even have the awareness to say, I don't know who I am.
Right.
You know, I'm always impressed.
Well, and you're told who you are.
Exactly.
Like, you have a publicist who's like, this is who you are for this movie.
And
I talk like I know. I don't know. I just watch Kelly Ripa, and I'm like, I don't know if that's really who Lea Michele is.
Is she young?
I don't know.
But that's the thing. They're propped up and they're told, you know, how to be and who that who they are, and then they are, and then they, there's got to be a crisis point, especially for people who are really young.
Fuck them. I mean, they're just tiny.
They're awful. They're garbage people. You know, and I know a friend of mine and I were watching Cujo last night, because that's what you do when you're living a very ritzy life. And we were like looking at Danny Pintaro, who then went on to do who's the boss, you know, and who is lovely. I mean, he's sort of still around in the, you know, ether, but we were just watching it going, what was that like for him as this little kid, you know, in this movie, being like in a car? We were just like, it's crazy to be like, does he really think that there's a dog that's trying to kill him? Does he think that he's going to die? Like, it's just, there's so much, you know, that they have to go through. Yeah. And then he became a huge star at this age, and you're like, there's no way you know who you are at that point. It's nuts.
Yeah, we have there's a couple of kids on the show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then when they're around, it's weird. I find it very strange that they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
I know. I know. It's like
one of them was sick and had to go to work that day. And it's just like, why is that? And then I have two kids on the show, and then people are like, oh, why don't you use your real kids? I have two kids in real life. It's just like, I don't want to do that. Because I also don't have to worry about just telling them how great they are every 5 seconds.
I know.
And then just like shooting the shit between takes, and then I have to worry.
Oh. But it also, like, it's so rare that both parents and kids are interested in doing this with their lives and good at it. It's like there you can come up with countless examples where, you know, the parent is great and had the career and worked for it, and the kid is just like never wanted to do it and been forced into doing it.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. I mean, for me as a kid, I was begging my parents to let me go and do like plays and stuff, and they wouldn't, and not until high school. And even then I would have to like sit certain plays out because like, you need to be with the family, you need to do some other things. Mm. And I begged for it because it's what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
But for kids, they don't know who they are, what they want. And it seems like, sure, that's fun. But for a lot of kids, it's miserable for them. And they don't really get a childhood, and they don't really get told, you know, and like you talk to child stars, they're like, I never got a prom. I never got a blah, blah, blah.
And these days it must be miserable because of social media and all that stuff. Like the second you launch onto that, whenever these kids are old enough to do that, they're going to see a lot of feedback.
Oh, I know. And like, how do you avoid that? I mean, I know that a lot of people when they get their own shows, I don't know if they told you guys or whatever, but like, don't look at social media. I mean, like, as adults in our, you know, 40s, we can handle it and go, okay, who cares? But you're a child.
I feel like that's
and people are immediately judging you and saying, you know, and making just horrible comments about how you look and
how
you act.
I feel like it's a new skill that, like, the next generation has to develop. And I wouldn't know how to teach it because I didn't have to deal with it.
All kids have to be, like, whether they're actors or not, they are, for lack of a better, you know, phrase, they have a brand. Like, they all are on social media. They all are creating things that exist forever.
It would have been the worst thing.
Because
in high school, all I cared was, I want you to like me. I want everyone to like me.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Oh, that would have been the worst thing in the world.
No, miserable. Oh. I mean, I still fall victim to it. I'm rarely on social media because I'm a grandma, as I mentioned. But I fall victim to it. If I ever do post something, like, suddenly I'm like, how many likes did this one get?
Oh, I know. Yeah. And you go back. You're going back throughout the day. Your downtime is, like, checking in with your likes.
You
and your
can't
like,
win. You can't
who
win.
Who am I? Who is this person? Yeah. Why do I care?
I don't care.
I know.
Somehow I rarely do when I open the app. I'm like,
And then you add, like, you know, adolescence to that. And like, there's just no way. And then you also just post things that you know, you get really emotional and you say something and you don't mean and or you think something's funny. My sense of humor, I mean, there was a time that my brother and I got one of our annuals, like we or yearbooks, and we went through the entire thing and just to make each other laugh and wrote horrible comments about almost everybody throughout the book. And it was just our, like, just stupid sense of humor. And it was just going to be between me and my brother. My mom found it, and she was like, this is disgusting. I'm worried about you. Because, you know, we wrote things like, you know, I eat babies or whatever under somebody's picture. Because it just made us laugh. And you think about that, like, if we had done that, you know, in front of all these. And it's like, you don't mean it. You don't realize how mean you are as a kid. You don't realize how, you know, how things really hurt or how things stay with you. I mean, the things that I, you know, that we all have that like are told to us and that they just
And everyone's looking
imprint.
To, or at least I was looking to not be different. So if someone were to broadcast something that's like, you eat babies, you're different. Everybody look at that person. Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Everyone's trying to find a way to like, you know, keep the beauty for themselves and pass the grossness off to other people.
Yeah, I know. Think. I know. It's true. It's like, oh, it's a nightmare. And I'm glad that we don't have to live through it. You know, it's better.
It's better.
Sorry,
we
kids.
Made it.
Sorry, we've made
Good
it.
Good luck.
We've made it.
We're
and everyone else loses.
Medium careers. Aspire to this.
we're happy that way. I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad I don't have all the things that other people have.
Well, they're coming. They're coming.
But that is another thing that I love about your show. That's that it has that. It's just that painful. The reality of where, you know, actors are and where, you know, most actors are and creative people are. They most, you know, actors, you know, don't have Melissa McCarthy career. You know, it's like you have, you know, and you're working at it and you're always sort of in this weird space and
this
trying
actor
to prove
ducked
yourself
into
too.
A writer's room and never came out.
But it's that's too... awesome though that you love that. You seem to love
I
it.
Do
you're
love
always
it.
On a show and you love it. And
but
I
respect how courageous every single actor who like puts their face on a camera, especially these days. I respect, you know, yeah.
It's I don't know. I mean, it's like, I think it's just, it's really good to follow your, not only like green lights and like how things are happening, but just your own bliss and your own joy. And if you're like, I don't like doing things, you know, and there's certain things that I've been like, I don't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have to, you know, whatever. And I think that's really smart. And that is also part of just like being mature and being happy. Because I do see some people just banging their heads into the ground because they think they have an idea of what they should be doing with their lives. And they're just, it's like, you know, try something. It doesn't mean you're giving up. It doesn't mean that the world is going to look down on you and go, oh boy, you really, I had different hopes for you. It's like all your own bullshit that you're putting on.
Doesn't that just come with time? Because I felt like people were telling me that in my 20s. I remember my aunt saying things like that. And I was like, not for me. I have to make it now. It's just... You know,
but, you know, who knows?
You have to
it's
get
like,
tired out
We
by
also
life.
Have, like, you don't realize in your 20s how much life you have ahead of you.
Right.
And then in your 40s, how little life you have left. And you're like, oh, I need to be happy. I need to enjoy my life. I need to not be competitive because that doesn't get me anywhere. I need to not,
Who's
like,
doing better so far, me or Margie?
Oh, you're definitely doing better. For sure.
You have
there's
more
a
water.
Point, this is the point system that I'm making little chalk lines for everyone's point.
No, but you're right. Not competitive. It's not competitive.
Not competitive.
Like,
it's not.
What's that exercise class where they like put your fucking who's in first place? I obviously don't go.
What?
Orange Theory?
Oh, my wife does Orange Theory.
My
what
wife.
Is that? I've gone by those gyms before because they're a chain.
They put on like a screen like ranking how you're doing in the room, and I would pass away or leave.
Oh my
I
god!
Can't
like '60s
it.
Dance competitions. Like who's in the lead?
But some people
Amber
really
Von Tussle.
Do. Some people thrive on that. And
yeah,
I
they really do love that.
Just not one of them.
Well, I think too, like. You know, anything athletic or like business related where there's like a number involved and there's like a score at the end, that I understand how people get that way because they're like, there's like a winner and a loser and I gotta beat my own score or I'm competitive with this person because they're really good. And that's the hardest thing about what we do because there is no score. There is no winner. And it's like you will always look ahead of you. You will always be like, well, I'm not doing as well as so-and-so. Or am I doing better than somebody? And it just doesn't
equal
anything.
Everyone scoring you is working from a different criteria. It's subjective.
Right.
It's art. Like, so everyone you go in front of is going to be like, here's your score from me.
Right.
But it's hard not to be like, that's my score. I'm amazing. I'm garbage.
And it's hard to just like, even just to have that conversation with yourself, because it's just like, just letting it all go is the nicest thing in the world. And being like, it's so not, it just doesn't matter. And then to, you know, other people, it's like, who cares, number one, but also like, are you happy and are you doing what you love? Great. Like, what else could you really want more than that? I mean, come on. Can you talk about the show that you're writing on, Margie?
Yes.
Oh, great.
It's called LA to Vegas. It'll start airing on Fox on January 2nd. And it's about the flight that goes from Burbank to Vegas on Friday night and comes back on Sunday, and the crew and the regular people who are on that flight. A stripper, a gambler, you know.
I love that.
And it's the same people.
We have a core cast of like six, I think. And then we have, you know, bachelor parties or various other people filling out our flights.
Right.
And
right.
yeah, it's really been fun, I have to say. I've been on a lot of, I've had some interesting experiences in the TV writing world. And this one is like, the staff is great. The cast is great. I mean, knock on wood, obviously, you know, I'll go back tomorrow and the whole place will burn down. But... today, I'm real happy.
And was the Cleveland show your first writing job?
There was one job before that. And then the Cleveland show was our second job. I have had a writing partner for years, and that we worked together on that.
And then you've just been going ever since.
Just failed I feel like show every time after I failed show. I moved to New York. I worked in Canada.
Oh, wow.
Someone changed their gender on a show. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. You know, just
plugging
it's just
along.
Always moving, always sticking. But no, I love that. I love that you've just jumped from one to another.
I've met amazing people. Like, I will say that. Some of the experiences have been like bizarre. But off of every job, I've come away with like incredible friends and, you know, lots more to laugh at.
Well, this was the first year I ever, when I was in the writer's room on the cartoon Big Mouth, which I just, for season two, I didn't work. If you've watched season one, it's amazing. And I can't take credit for any of it. And for very little in season two, because I just came in a couple days a week. But it was my first time ever doing that. And I have such respect for writers now that I never did, because... I'm always that asshole improviser that comes in on a show and like, okay, the words are kind of this. I'm gonna massage them and work on them. And you're like, every word is poured over, and they take every line and they go again and again and again. And then the actors show up after like months of working on these scripts. And I was like, right, they've really thought about every word that they've put into these lines. It's not just like they're just going to say this.
But it's what you're taught to do. Like, I took classes at an acting studio I won't name just because I just got weirdly self-conscious. But they would say, cross out all the stage direction and punctuation. Just, like, make it your own. Mm. Get the gist of the scene. And I suppose when it's the right combination of, like, writers and actors, like, that's an amazing symbiotic thing that happens.
Right.
But, yeah, it is a weird thing to work really hard on a script and then see people audition.
See people
just,
go.
Like...
whatever,
make it their own.
Blah blah blah. I mean, I'm not really going to care too much about choices,
especially in comedy, because it's like rhythmic oftentimes.
Yes,
at least network comedy.
And like you use this word, and so you're not going to say the word again throughout later in the line or like later in the scene even. And you know, that was the thing too, going through the scene and be like, okay, we've already said this in this way, and you know, and it does make a difference. And you know, I also realized that, man, I loved that gig, and I would love to do something like that again. Or I would love to go back to that show again in that capacity. But I did not. I'm glad I'm not sitting in a room every day for the amount of time, because I wasn't.
Just watching your body fall apart and your skin get pasty.
No, I had a lot of. I was like, wow, people are really good at this job. And I got better as it went on. But I had a lot of like, I was like, whoa, this is. It's hard. It's hard work. And so that was the thing that I was like, this is a lot, but how great.
It's fun.
It's real fun.
Yeah.
Well, what do you guys have in life, coming up in life? What's going on this fall? What's the fall?
Ooh.
Well, you say that, and all I can think about is college football, which I'm obsessed with.
Right. Now, who's your team? Michigan?
I went to University of Michigan.
Yes.
So Michigan, this is our first year with all of Harbaugh's recruits, blah, blah, blah. We've won all four games.
I like Harbaugh.
Sloppy.
I'm a Harbaugh guy.
God bless.
Yeah.
Jim or John? Because everyone likes John.
Jim. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like the Belushis? There's a Jim and a John?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jim is... yeah, he's crazy.
Now, are they brothers or they're
brothers? Yeah, they're brothers.
They are brothers.
Okay, and they're both on the team?
No, different teams.
Oh, okay.
John coaches in the NFL, and Jim is currently coaching at his alma mater, Michigan.
Okay.
Is that how you say that? That suddenly didn't sound
like... what, Michigan?
Alma mater.
Michigan.
Michigan? Touché. But yeah, he's. I love him in the course of a football season because he wears his stress in weight. So at the beginning of the season, often he's like real trim... and his khakis are slim fit and tight.
Uh-huh.
And as the season goes on, he balloons up into like Oogie Boogie Man from Nightmare Before Christmas. He just gets like a round potato shape. And then if it's a stressful right before the Ohio State game, he gets like weirdly anxiety skinny again.
Wow.
He's just a woman, and I fucking love it.
Are you from there?
I'm not from there, no. My mom and dad went to law school at University of Michigan.
Mm.
So we had you know, an interest in that school growing up, but
Do you have a team? Do you have a team?
I'm a fair weather fan.
Okay.
I don't really have allegiance to a team because the players, if I don't like the players, it's hard to root for the team.
Right.
So I was a 49ers fan. That's why I like Jim Harbaugh. He was the coach of the 49ers. Now I don't like the, some of the players. I don't like them. Mm-hmm. And I was a New York Giants fan and, I don't like them.
Right.
Why
right.
do I have to root for them forever?
And you don't.
Nobody
and that's the other, that's the fun thing
You're
too.
You
I don't just, get it. Why are you guys ganging up on me?
Look, okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. You slipped in competition. Margie is now winning the conversation.
Winning the conversation. That is going to be the title of my memoirs.
Ooh. Oh, my God. I feel like there are people that are like that. They have to win the conversation.
Yeah.
I can be that way sometimes, and I hate that about myself. I found that on this show that I sometimes have to one-up people's stories, and I have to go, well, I'm that way, and I hate that. And I'm like, why can't I just let somebody's story be that?
You're
and
just go, relating. You're not
I'm trying one-upping. To. I think that's my conscious impulse. Is that the way I'm saying? Is I'm saying that right? But I do hear myself telling alma mater. But I hear myself saying that sometimes, and I'm like, why did my story have to win? Like, why did my story have to be, you know, more extreme? You know, crazier. Like, you know, whatever. And I don't love that. And I, you know, sometimes, you know. I don't love that people are just like, they have to dominate or they have to get the last word.
Mm-hmm. I think the most competitive maybe person I've ever met, we all know this person because we were all in Groundlings. So this one person, his name rhymes with Steve Little.
Oh, okay. And, not familiar. Okay, great.
Yeah. And in the Sunday company, this person whose name rhymes with Steve Little, he would keep the most detailed notes and like tally sheets of like you put up a scene and like how many scenes did you put up, how many made it into the show.
Wow.
And would save them for years. I bet he Whoa. Still has them.
That's wow
making me sweat.
It was
yes.
it was insane.
It is so crazy because and I have talked about Sunday Company a lot on here, and so people that, you know, listening to this, it's like it was this insanely rigorous boot camp comedy school thing where you write so much material and then you get very little of it in the show. And I remember being so wrapped up in, I didn't keep running tallies like that, but I remember being like, how many writing credits do I have this week compared to the other people? And, you know, and it was just, it was so important how much you got in the show. And then the second I was out of it and I went and watched a show, everything everybody was telling me the whole time through was true. It was like, you don't care how many writing credits somebody has or how many scenes they're in. If it's somebody you really like and they're only in one thing, you're like, I want more of them. And it makes you like them more. And it's not like, you know, but I used to think like it's going to, that's the math of it really matters.
As if you can quantify comedy. I remember Ben Falcone saying explicitly, he's like, I know you're all going to do it anyway, but I'm going to say this, do not count your writing credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, one, two,
okay,
three.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, sure.
Yeah,
because Ben was both my and Margie's first director in Sunday Company. Mm-hmm. And he was so great about that. The whole thing was just like, he would always be like, you got to rip it. You got to suck a couple times. It's fine. Let it go. And we would just be like, no, I can't. I can't fail. And then, of course, you do.
Yeah.
And that's
And now he's out of the business.
He's no longer there.
He
quit.
Well, I liked him. Is he
really
a teacher
good
now?
Good luck for him.
Teacher?
He's probably a merchant of some sort of
bus driver.
Product somewhere. Bless his heart. If you're listening,
he
Ben,
tried.
I hope he has a radio where he is. well, that's fun. I, believe it or not, do not watch sports, but I love going live. Like, I like going to games and I can get into them, but there's something that happens to me when I watch them on TV that is like, when some people talk about like movies or they just can't connect, or how some people are with like award shows. Like, I go crazy watching the Oscars, and I totally get when people watch it and like, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen. And I watch it and scream at it like it's the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's you know. But I haven't been, I'm trying to think of the last time I've been to a game. I mean, I'm calling them sporting
events. A sports game?
A sports game. you know.
There's something weird about watching it on TV, too, because the crowd noise just becomes like this weird ambient white mm-hmm. noise that, I don't know, it can sometimes
And there's so
me.
Much downtime, too.
Yes.
I think, like, I can watch, like, when I've watched, like, basketball on TV, it's more interesting than, like, watching football or baseball because I'm just like, there's so much time where they're just kind of hanging out and they're commenting and they're replaying and they're talking about this and that. And I think if you are a nerd about that stuff, which most people are, and they get really into that, I think that's all really fascinating information. But I'm just like, move the ball over there. Move, you know, who's got more points? Go, you know.
I mean, I fell in love with sports mostly because of the drama of it. Like, during those breaks, often they'll do, like, player profiles or uh-huh. information about... It's why I love, you know, Jim and John Harbaugh. Like,
yeah.
they're the weirdest brothers who are so different. Anyways, there's so many, like, personal stories, and I get invested in every single one, and then... I suddenly wind up caring about football.
Sure, and I get that. And I mean, coming from North Carolina, like it was such a football and basketball state, especially, and the college basketball was just insane. And I went to Wake Forest, which was a big basketball school. And
did you play? You walked on?
Oh yeah, sure. Tim Duncan and Muggsy Bogues and I all played.
Is there a Muggsy Bogues?
Yeah, Muggsy Bogues went to Wake, and so did Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan was there. He was 2 years ahead of me, I think. And he was a star then. Like, it was crazy how he was allowed to come to classes 10 minutes later because he would get mobbed on his way to class. I mean, it was like he was already, they were like, this guy is, you know, and just the nicest guy and very soft-spoken and just like, every, you know. And he just retired, I believe.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel old when you're like, mm-hmm. oh, wow, that, you know, retired. Great. But he's done it. He's done
I was
it.
In he Tom Brady's it. Class at Michigan, and
you
now
were?
They're like, he's the oldest man in football. He's so brittle and frail on the field. It's amazing. He can stand for an hour. Like,
I mean, if I know who somebody is in sports, like, they're a huge deal. I mean, that's crazy that Tom Brady was
yeah.
there.
He was sort of, I mean, he was a nobody at Michigan. Uh-huh. He was like sort of the doughy backup for a while, and then he had like a breakout year, but nobody thought much of him.
Yeah.
Turns out he did all right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my father and stepfather both went to Clemson, and so that's a big football. So they're really,
huge.
Every time my mom is always like, they're watching the game constantly because we've always been Clemson Tigers fans. But I'd have no idea, you know.
I can't believe I've gotten you to talk about sports.
I know. This is the most I've ever talked about sports on the show. But it's good because I'm tired of talking about the same old things. But I want to talk to you, both of you. I want to hear from both of you. Who wants to tell a story? Or an opinion. It doesn't have to be anything.
I'll start because right. I was thinking driving over here. I'm like, Drew, I've known you for...
A long
forever.
Time. Yeah.
Oh, are we allowed to...
To what? Curse?
Oh, yeah.
Please don't.
I can't remember.
Oh, my God. Please, of course.
I was thinking
you're
going
to get a fine.
Yeah. There's a curse jar.
Yes.
you've known me. We've known each other forever, and I feel like you know everything about me and, like, what could be a revelation. But then I thought... There's something that, like, I really think probably two or three people in my life know about.
Wow.
I'm getting so nervous. And it's not
it.
That big a deal. I haven't
it.
Ever talked about it in therapy. And probably more people know about it than I acknowledge. It's like being an addict when you're like,
right.
nobody knows that I'm like drinking
like...
pills for breakfast. So I have, I'm 40 and I still have a blankie.
And you do?
It's not just that I have it. This is the part I never admit. I sleep with it. Nightly. It's travel.
Is it the same one you
same
had?
One.
The same one you've had since you were a kid.
Yeah. I got it when I was one from my grandmama.
Uh-huh.
And I say that because I want it to seem like it's a sentimental thing and it's a family thing. So, of course, she wants to stay close to the spirit of her grandmama.
Sure.
It's not that. It's literally a security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like white and have this satin trim. It's now just this stinky, disgusting, threadbare gray ball of shit. It has a little drawing on it, a little embroidery on it that I've had tattooed on my body.
Oh, wow.
Like, I And I hide it. Like, I travel with a couple girlfriends from the Groundlings for years. We try to go somewhere just for a few days together. And, like, we'll all go to bed, like, either sharing a room or all in one room, whatever. And then I'll, like, sneak it out of my bag and stuff it quietly under my head. And then in the morning, like, get rid of it and hope nobody sees it. I'm sure they've all seen it.
Oh,
and they're
my
like,
God.
Why is she sleeping on garbage?
Yeah.
Now, do you get scared to put it in the washing machine because it's going to fall apart?
It's already fallen apart. It's disgusting. Like, I don't, and I just recently went away for a couple of days to get some writing done.
Good.
What a cliche. But for a minute when I came home, I didn't see him. It's male, Blanky.
Does he have a name?
Blanky.
Blanky. Okay, great. Sure.
I didn't see Blanky in my bag. And I was like, oh, God. And I really had like a childish panic. And I was like, I had told myself, I'm like, you can sleep without it. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but you probably can't.
I can relate. There's something psychological that you would probably have a really hard time.
Yeah, I can. I should talk about this in therapy. Fuck. if I'm dating someone or in a relationship, I can fall asleep with a human or like some kind of contact. But if not, if I'm just like getting in a cold bed by myself, like little blankie under the cheek.
And what happens if it's just you and you don't have the blankie?
It's never happened.
Never happened.
Never. Wow. Not a day. It travels with me fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's magic. Or at least they told me that when I was little. I still believe it. So any part of your body that's ailing, if you have a sore throat, you wrap it around your throat. If your back hurts, you put it on your lower back. I'm crazy. I present like a functional grown-up, but like this is the thing. It's right now. It's tucked away in a drawer. It's never out when I leave the house. But when people are like, "What would you get if your house was on fire?"
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'll never tell anyone. I'll never be like my blankie. Yeah. But that's before pictures. That's before my phone.
Yeah, but it's also there is something really like relatable, I think, for all of us in that. And that, like, I mean, I have a friend, my friend Nina Millen. I don't know if either one of you know. She's awesome, and she's sort of introduced me for a while. And I need to keep up with it. I'm really bad about things, especially learning new habits and doing things. But she's really into crystals, and that's her thing. Where she's like, she carries crystals around with her all the time. And we went just to a store, and she was like, just pick up whatever attracts you. And then it's like you grab something and you hold on to it and you're like, I put all this energy into this, like my focus, my strength, you know. And I think there, it's the same thing. It's like you have there's a reason why the term, you know, safety blanket exists and security blanket. It's like, that's a thing.
I've thought about it at this point, and I legitimately think I would go through like a grieving process.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And I think maybe it's just been like the one consistent thing through like a kind of like chaotic childhood, weird, screwy adulthood. And I don't know. It's fucking weird.
I sucked my thumb until I was in fifth grade.
Really?
Yeah. So I could totally relate.
All right.
It was. You're sleeping over at friends' houses at that point.
Oh yeah.
And it was always my left thumb, and it was like I'm right handed.
Oh.
And it's like I'll never break this habit. This is the hardest thing to break. There was no way I was going to stop sucking my thumb. My mom sucked her thumb through college.
Yes. Wow.
And then I got tackled at school. And this is how I learned to tell my right hand from my left hand. I have a scar on my thumb and my hand. And it was a glass. It cut open my hand.
Oh, wow.
And like, it was a terrible cut. It was like the muscle came through. It was the worst thing.
Yeah.
And they had to wrap up my hand. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I quit sucking my thumb.
You couldn't do it.
But and now I know my left hand is the one with the scar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's just a habit. Like, and I remember like we used to joke about it when I was a kid. Like, what if Margie's 16 and still has that fucking thing?
Uh-huh.
16 comes. What if Margie goes to college? And I remember going to college. I can't remember if it was my mom or my sister telling me, like, don't let anyone see it because if they want to pull a prank on you, they'll destroy this thing.
Wow.
So that's when I started hiding it.
Oh,
like, it literally is like an addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ew. it's also something that like you need, and like it's like what is the, I think also when you're like the older you get, like the less it's like, well, this is just who I am.
Yeah,
this
now
is what
it's I need like to I do. Now it's I mean, it would be a shame if you
I mean,
broke
it's like,
that habit.
I have to have coffee every day. Like I'm a mess.
But that's
if I don't
like
have
an
coffee.
Adult thing. This
yeah,
is
but,
like.
But you know,
crystals
I think,
are like that's what adults do. That's
yeah,
why, like
sure,
self-actualized. This is like you have a blanket.
But that
you
was
have
the thing I was saying about
it.
What Nina's thing about crystals is she's way into it, but she's also like you don't have to be. Like you can have it, and it can mean whatever it is to you. It's not like you have to really know and like oh you picked an obsidian that means you're this kind of a person or whatever. It doesn't. It's like you can just. You know, there are different crystals that have different properties and they mean different things to people that really get into that whole thing. But it also can just be the, just we all hold our phones all the time. We do these like weird, nervous, you know, ticky things that we do just to hold on to some sense of.
It's so
you
weird.
Know,
like
security.
I don't have a ton of vices. Like I'm not a big drinker, smoker, drug user, anything really. Mm-hmm. But this is a source of shame, the way something like scoring crystal in, you know, a dark alley would be. I'd rather tell you that I do crystal meth and you never know that about me. But then
well,
tell
I'm
you
glad
that I have a
that it's
blankie.
Just a blanket. but yeah, it isn't that weird how like we, but it's also the child and you, that's the fear. It's coming from you as a kid because like no one isn't, you know, especially now is going to be like, she seems like the security, but it's like a say that's.
Well, I'm not going to go on social media after this post.
Well, absolutely
I don't hear
not. Want to hear from people what they have to say. but I mean, that's great. My brother had a blanket forever and then passed it on to his kids. And I think they still have it. Like he passed his on to either his son or his daughter, I'm not sure. And at last I knew it was like in a Ziploc bag somewhere, but they still hold
it's
on to
family.
It and they love it. It's in the family. Mm-hmm. And they needed that sort of thing.
I had a pillowcase that I had from when I was a kid, and it was a Sesame Street pillowcase. And so I slept on it for, you know, years past when I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm going to keep this because it would be so cool when I have kids one day. They'll sleep on this Sesame Street pillowcase. And I waited and they're sort of into Sesame Street. And I'm like, all right,
now's the time.
Uh-huh. And I have two kids. Both of them hate that fucking pillowcase.
Yeah.
That's so I saved it.
I know. You're like, all right, I'll be for nephews, my grandchildren. Maybe they will like it. Maybe they'll appreciate it.
You should will Somebody's it to them anyway, so that they'll have to deal with it at some point.
When I was a kid, I was a big collector. I collected chapsticks and I had that's really weird. What is that about? And I didn't even, I used it, but it was more about all the different colors. And I had a giant rubber band around all these different kinds of chapstick. And I would see a new kind and I would have to have it. And I had to have every Star Wars character, every He-Man figure. I'd have, all the figurines, I'd have all of that. Like if there was one I didn't have. And then when I was in high school and I got into music, if I got into an artist, I had to have every album. And that's fine if it's like somebody like the B-52s I was really into. And they had like 6 or 7 albums by the time I was in high school. I was also into the Grateful Dead and they had like 30. And every time you go, there's some weird new concert remastered. Even if I had all the songs on some other CD, I had to have all of them. I was like, there was this thing about like, I need the entire thing.
That's the only thing I was huge into the Grateful Dead.
You were?
And I it's so many tapes.
So
many tapes.
And it's one of those things that like, people don't really know until you get into a band like that.
Yeah.
Like it is so deep and they were, you know, 50 years they've been making, making music. Are you still into the Grateful Dead?
I still am. Yeah. I listen to them a lot on Sirius XM Radio.
Oh, sure.
Which is a competitor of yours.
I think it is. I think it is. Oh, you just went way down in competition.
Larry is losing.
Margie, you're doing very well.
Old Blanky McGee
Grateful
over
Dead
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And did you see them in concert?
I did,
Yeah. I did, too. I got to see Jerry, it was a year before Jerry died when I saw
them. Yeah, my last show was they opened up their last tour in Vegas and I went to all three of those shows.
Uh-huh.
Real basic question from a girl raised in Pasadena who currently has a blankie. When anyone says Grateful Dead, all I think about is like acid trips. Do you? Is that part of the live concert experience when you go to a Grateful Dead concert?
Like, I've
do you
never, go? No, no. I would smoke pot.
Sure.
You know, but I wouldn't.
I just thought they were.
I would
next
feel
level.
Like it would be a terrible thing.
I think it would be
like
a terrible thing.
I would feel
too.
Like I was trapped there.
Yes. I've only done acid once in my life, and I had it a great time, but I never really need to do it again. And there are definitely people doing everything.
Yeah.
Because the concert, I remember there were these, you know, I saw them in Charlotte, and there are those, you know, those little VOMs where the lights are, you know, in between, and there were just people spinning. Mm-hmm. They were just constantly spinning for the entire, and their concerts were long. I mean, they did like 3.5-4 hour long concerts, if
what
I remember.
What a workout.
So they just would do these drum solos that would just go on and on. On and on and on. And because it was just the experience of the concert. And they also were a band who they were, you know, I guess this part of being a jam band, that they would just kind of riff, or they would try something new, or they would, you know, they only had one song. Touch of Grey is their only like top 40 hit that they ever had. So every song that they've done, you know, you want to hear a couple of their hits, but also they would just cover things, or they would try out new stuff. And that was part of
the
it
experience.
Wasn't like you're, you know, going to like Bruce Springsteen and seeing right. like all the hits, you
yeah,
know, the great,
like a
you know,
polished
Elton John, and you're like, you know,
yeah,
all this,
and
you know.
Like those people, like when they do a tour, it's usually the same set list mm-hmm. every night.
Yes.
But like the Dead or Fish or something like that is like, it's
jam
totally
band.
Different.
Whatever they're yeah. feeling that night and whatever. And, you know, and they'll just kind of do. And there are people that travel with the band, the groupies that will go to as many concerts as they can. And we'll do that. But, you know, I don't know why. I just look back at like the collection thing. I got to a point in my life that I was like, I'm in this weird race with nobody else. Like, why do I have to have all of these things that I just don't? And it's, you know, I can be that way now a little bit about movies. Like, I feel like I have to go see every movie that comes out. And it's, again, it's a thing where I'm like, I go see the most obscure movies. Like, I have to go see every movie that's nominated for an Indie Spirit Award, because I'm like, I vote on that. I'm like, I want to see all of them, and so that I'm well informed. But I'll see these things, and I'm like, I don't have anybody to talk about this movie with, because nobody else even wants to look at this movie, you know. And I love doing it, but I, you know, there's some times that it's just like, I don't know what that is in us to. I don't know what we're racing against.
Well, and this is like about like maybe this is what middle age has brought about. Is like I'm done with secrets. I'm done. So
yes.
I'm just like unzipping and exposing everything. And
doesn't it feel great?
It just does, like, mostly when it's like a safe space with friends. But like in this on the show I'm working on, there's a child that has a toy it's attached to and it gets lost. And we were pitching on the story and I told this room that I have a blanket. Didn't tell them that I sleep with it because that's just next level. And the air that sucked out of the room, like it literally was, and it was silent and it felt like forever because nobody has, it's like you not being able to talk to anyone about a movie.
You're
nobody
right.
in the room would be like, oh yeah, me too. They were like,
or I don't know, maybe
broken.
In that situation, people are just afraid of their own.
Maybe.
They're just like, I don't want to be that vulnerable, or I don't want to reveal my own blanket. You know,
that's one thing. And as I get older, I don't like hanging around people that are not vulnerable. Don't
totally.
Let them
Absolutely.
Be vulnerable.
Absolutely. And I think too, like the more you talk about it, the more you go, oh, I feel that way. I connect. Because it's like, oh, we're all, you know, a lot more similar in ways. And it's like, I know. And I feel like too, like creative people that can't be vulnerable are not very good. They might be, but they have to let themselves go there. They have to know that they're a mess and a nerd and
I've been
sloppy.
Real
and
reactive to people like not caring. Like that seems like a cool thing these days. Like everyone talks with vocal frying because it indicates you don't care. So there's you're never vulnerable. You don't pitch a joke with any energy so that it can sit in a fucking dead space and you have to deal with like, that's still who I am and I can collect myself even though not everybody, you know, whatever. There's just a lot of neutralness that, I'm all big feelings.
And when you realize that that's insecurity, that's fear.
Sure.
And that's, they're coming up like, I don't really care. But I'm like, you are terrified of you know, being who you are. And you're never really going to get to that next level until you go there. Like, you're going to have to.
Part of me, it's so protected and like, and they're still really smart and funny, but they don't have to be like, whatever. Anyways, I envy it.
And also sometimes. From the groundlings, like the way we're just trained is just to be raw and emotional and open. And I think a lot of other places and people, there are people great, but they just can be encouraged to just work from their head and just be like, be clever and be witty And
we're also
and
trained to like just to notice minutiae.
Yes.
And I think that people might not feel like they can be vulnerable just because they don't have the awareness mm-hmm. of stopping and just focusing on this little.
True.
Oh, I mean, I drive my friends crazy when we're out to eat and I'll be like, what is, and I'll be like, I'll be just so rude, just laughing at somebody in public. And I'm like, well, I mean, you know, because I'm more fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And it's never like a big scene that would, that anybody else would pick up and go, oh my God. But I would just be like, what is happening, right? That what is going on? And mm-hmm. all the friends are like, Drew, back here, look over here. No, no. And I'm like, I'm sorry. It's just so fascinating to me, but I love it. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. it's so entertaining to me. It's not, you know.
And we were also taught to like write from what we react to. Like Patrick mm-hmm. Bristow would always say, like, what's making you angry? What's making you laugh? Like, that's where you write from. That's
yes.
like the next thing to
right.
work on.
Yeah.
So I, you know, maybe the Groundlings trained me to have all
yeah.
big feelings.
It definitely encourages you to bring those out and let those just like fly
mm-hmm.
for sure. Larry Dorff.
I had something happen. I proved the existence of karma today.
What? Wow.
Is that a big thing?
That's, yeah.
That seems pretty huge.
I was driving here.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving here. Okay, so I put in Waze.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I was running a little bit late. And while I was driving, it said I was going to be between 2 and 5 minutes late. Mm. And I didn't know if this was a live broadcast. Am I going to, is this going to just, it's going to be a disaster. If I'm late, I can't be late. 2 to 5 minutes late.
Sure.
Kept fluctuating. Then I get off. It tells me to get off at Pass Avenue.
Okay.
Get off at Pass Avenue. There's a homeless man at Pass Avenue. No teeth. And I'm looking at him. And I think, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give him every $1 bill I have in my wallet.
Make it rain.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I had.
You're also a stripper, so that's
$1. I had $3 $1 bills in my wallet. I gave him all three. He took them. He could have been a little more thankful.
Oh,
but that's
know,
a
no,
separate thing. I wanted a little bit more. I did want more.
I know.
But
that'll come back to bite him. Karma
yeah, exactly. That's what it was.
In that instance, I is that the right expression? In that instance, mm-hmm. I don't think it's right.
Alma mater.
Instant.
In that instant,
right?
I looked back at my ways. Now, it was suddenly, I was going to be 4 minutes early.
I was going to say, I was like maybe 2 minutes late and you guys were both waiting on me today. So you got here early.
Because of that.
Because you,
it was it was crazy. I was looking at ways. I was stressed. A lot of people on Pass Avenue to get off. And then immediately it went, I don't know how that happened.
Because,
wow.
Yeah, you got that generous was,
that's,
and
that's
got
karma.
Rewarded. That's
and
beautiful.
I think that's really, that's awesome. And I think we also just think we're always too busy to help somebody out or whatever. I don't know why I don't. I used to have such a weird thing. I don't know. And it's like I definitely should, you know, give more money. You know, it's like, and just things like that, because it's like, yeah. And also for a lot of people, it's like, I think like just the human connection is, you know, they don't have that. They're lost in that way. Like, they don't know how to be grateful or thankful because they just don't, the people don't acknowledge
exist.
That they exist. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, so
that's why he wasn't as thankful as I wanted him to be.
Yes,
well,
yes.
He didn't have
his manners.
He couldn't.
But a lot of homeless people will just wander out into traffic and they don't obey traffic laws because they're not socialized. They're just beyond.
Yeah.
And they don't care. They're just like, hit me, kill me. I don't care. You know? And, but I think there's got, I mean, as much as like money is nice, I think just connecting mm-hmm. in some way, acknowledging them is.
Well, I didn't
want really
to, I handed it to him and I didn't want him to touch my hand. I just wanted
to. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Just throw it.
Yeah.
Into just walking
it was a
back.
Very,
this story.
It was just very like feeding a tiger and
oh
I was just going to draw my hand. So I'm not that good.
No.
But I do other good
but
things.
But I love
to do. In the morning, I think I've proven karma a little bit. In the morning, I walk my dog.
Mm-hmm.
Brag.
I know. And while I'm walking my dog, my dog.
I don't know what
dog,
he's bragging about, that he has a dog or that he walks it.
That he can walk and that he can do it with a dog.
But if my dog poops, I clean up the dog, poop, uh-huh. not the dog, the poop. But then I leave the bag in my hand open. All right?
Uh-huh.
Because I'll search around and I'll try to fill the bag with any, if I see a cigarette butt or any garbage or other unclean dog poop.
God,
and if I
nice.
Do that, I feel like good things happen that day.
Yes, yes. That's really
good. That's such a good way to turn it around, because I'll pick up my dog's poop and I'll be like, what's all these people eating all this poop here? And it's like petrified, rock solid. It really would take no effort for you to pick it up.
Yeah, I'll
do that now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And it's nice to just think we can do little things and they will... You'll get to your podcast on time or other things will happen, but it's also like
little ways.
You can do little things, because I think we all think, what can I do? There's just no way I can. In the world, I'm like, I can't go to Puerto Rico and build houses for people. I can't go there's no way, but it's like, you can do things like that. And then, also, you know, time is weird and you can always be, I think, I don't know. I know people have different feelings about this, but I had a father who was crazy about the clock. And if you were 5 minutes early, you were 30 minutes late. Mm-hmm. I mean, like his thing was you had to get there. And I just inherently disagree with that. I think, you know, sometimes there are other things that are more important. And I don't think that, you know, you should always be late all the time or not, you know, take care of other people's time. But, you know, taking time to do something like that, it's like, and then the lesson is you made it early. Mm-hmm. But even if you were 2 to 5 minutes late, it's like, who cares? You ultimately did a better thing than getting to the show on time. Like,
I think. It is funny. This just reminded me. When I first moved here, I had an agent.
Uh-huh.
Brag.
Very brag. And I was.
Larry's winning.
The whole agency, it was just little people, like kind of circus act kind of people.
And you?
And then I was like going to be there.
The breakout. The
they were going to expand, and I was going to be their non little person client.
You're the flagship.
And his thing was, and he had it written like at his desk, like, you know, ways to book the job. And he insisted that you always get to your audition 10 minutes early. And that he just insisted on it. And he would always call for feedback.
Mm. Oh my God!
And it was
how weird.
It was so that was his thing. Like, you got to get there early,
you never get points for getting there early.
No one cares.
Like, nobody cares. I mean, if you're, you know, more than 30 minutes late, it might be an issue. But nobody cares if you're even 10 minutes late.
Right.
Who cares? Like, it's like, we also know we live in LA where traffic is so unpredictable, and it can take you, God knows how
but
long.
It was so
but
weird.
Also,
that was
what
his
a weird.
Thing.
It's also it just it, that feels like. I you know, you look at that now and be like, this person doesn't know the business at all. Like, you must get there 10 minutes early, sign in with good penmanship. Yeah. And, you know, just
but
these,
did it
you know,
have to do with his clientele? Like, is there
something
that they had to, like, let the room exhale because there's carnival people in the house?
Maybe. No, I know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but
maybe it would take them longer to get...
We added this part out.
But don't they know? But don't they know in life?
Like,
that's just part of. I mean, that's the reality that they would have to. But I don't know. But also, how did you get this agent, and how did they find you?
I would do Backstage West. Remember Backstage West?
Yes.
Sure.
And in the back of it, you could see like who was seeking. Like what agencies were seeking clients.
Yes.
And I would just, that was my thing. Like
you
I think every month
ICM
I would do, yeah,
UTA
I would do mass mailings when I first moved here. And like, and I remember I have a cousin who I think she used to act. I don't know what she's doing now, but she would be like, you need to stand out. That was what she said. Like, cause they're getting billions of submissions every month. So you need to stand out. And it's like, so I would start doing like colored envelopes and like,
all these things that
if I saw them, I'd be like, well, this person's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to open that.
I love that. I remember I did the exact same thing, and I would just submit for everything.
Oh yeah.
I mean, things that would be no way I could ever get, and I would get Backstage West. I would get it every week.
Yeah.
And I would send out between 30 and 40 headshots a week, mm-hmm. and they were black and white, and there was so much money that I did not have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was working at Pottery Barn, and I was like sending and you know all these just this, you know, and I was. I remember the only agent that called me to sign me because I had no professional credits, no LA stage credits at all, anything when I first moved out here. They were in Sherman Oaks, and the deal was I could intern for them one day a week, basically go in and work for free, and they would rep me. And I was like, what a great deal. I'll learn about the business. Mm-hmm. And I did learn a lot about the most disgusting mm-hmm. underbelly. And they had a lot of like softcore Cinemax actors. They had a lot of like the cast of Leave It to Beaver. That was like people you're like, oh, that person, you know, Ken Osmond, you know, who was, you know, what's his name? Eddie Haskell on Leave It to Beaver. Great. Or sorry if he's listening or still alive, I apologize. But it's like, you know, it was just the weirdest ragtag collection of people. And they were the meanest agents. They were so rude. I would go in there every day. They wouldn't speak to me. They would just bark orders. And I had to, you know, pull headshots, and there were some of the craziest headshots that people had. And they wanted everyone to have like 8 different looks.
Oh my
and
God.
It was like some of the people had like the same expression, but just different sweaters mm-hmm. on. And they were like 2 different, and they were black and white back then in 99 when I moved out here. And it was like, so you really couldn't tell. Like they were just like, why do we need all these things?
I did that thing where you had to do like a bunch of different looks, but it was either get like 8 different looks or get your hair and makeup professionally done.
Oh,
so I was
right.
like, I gotta get the 8 looks, but then the pictures are just fucking, I look like a monster. Like it's just, it was completely worthless.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just burning through cash.
Yep, yep. But you're just like plugging away, and then yeah. one of these days, and I mean, I would audition in people's apartments, like in their in their bedrooms. There was one time I was in this guy's bedroom, and it was like for some school shooting drama. It was like this Columbine kind of thing, and I remember having to act like my friends were dead, and I'm in his bedroom, acting this out. He has a little camcorder in the bedroom. I mean, like, it's so shady, the things that you would do. Just be like, it's an opportunity.
Totally.
It's a job. Or I would go and wait in these long, like, you know. And I have, I mean, I feel like in the last, I don't know, couple years, I have thumbed through a backstage, and they're very different now. They don't have nearly as many opportunities. And I think because of, you know, online stuff, there's just so many more like LA cast. There's just different ways that people kind of go about it. But it used to be the thing you
would
do.
People now generate their own material and put it on YouTube. And
it's
like,
so
you
much
don't have
better.
To go to someone's
it's
bedroom
so
to be.
Much better. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, and yeah. And that was just the thing where it was so, I don't know what I would do without the internet. Like there's just professionally, there was just no way. You just hope somebody saw you on stage somewhere. You know, otherwise you're like, you're just kind of waiting until something happens. Mm-hmm. It's just so futile. But, you know, here we are.
Here we are. Here
living
we are,
our guys. Dreams.
I feel bad that I threw Steve Little under the bus.
Oh, I love it. But we love Steve Little.
And we all had our certain, you have to do something at the Groundlings to like keep yourself, you know, occupied and
absolutely.
Feel like you have control.
Yeah. Right.
Otherwise you'll explode.
Exactly.
So many wigs.
And
So many wigs.
And he's a delightful friend of ours.
Oh,
it'd be
best.
Different if it was like, oh, this person that no one
that's notoriously
enjoys whatsoever.
A shithead.
Right.
No, he's
right.
the living best.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, you guys.
Who won?
Look what we did. Oh, you know what? It's a tie.
Bullshit. A tie.
You both lost. I'm so sorry. I win. That's the weird part.
It's weird because you said like you don't want to be competitive. You don't want to.
Yeah,
win.
But and I'm not. You know, no. I just always win. So that's just kind of how it works. You know, I mean, I realize
the numbers
that
don't lie. I don't
yeah, exactly.
Say.
I mean, sorry. It's the score. I've been keeping score. I've been very fair. Look, you were both up, both down. I wasn't even in play, and now I'm winning. But thank you guys so much for coming on and doing
thanks
this.
Thanks for having
me.
Yes.
You.
I didn't know whether to say me or us. I just said, thanks for having
me.
And then I just stopped talking.
I have this terrible thing lately where I combine words. Like,
we're actively dying. You don't have time to say 2 separate words.
I know. I break down. Like, there's words that I've never gotten wrong before. The other day I was on stage and I am supposed to say, look or listen, either would be fine. And I go, luss. And I'm like, luss. And I was like, look and listen. Well, that makes sense. Your brain was just like, these two things together. Therefore, you
choose
know,
one of these. Nope, both.
Nope, you'll get both. They're both coming out now. Luss. Anyway, I want to thank my guests, Margie McGee and Larry Dorff, for being on the show.
Yay.
Yay. This has been another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Thank you for listening and have a week.